Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Here we are. This is the Donald on a Kitchen. We come to you live from KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. We talk about food, farming, advice, opinions, and
generally good cheer, except for our bummer news.
Oh, we have minor bummer news, but Don Lana Kitchen is sliding into the holidays. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused, since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op. And the Donald on a Kitchen Show is also supported by Farm to Folk, an Ames-based food cooperative connecting you to local farmers year-round. CSA shares make great gifts for the holidays. Farm to Folk also offers local hormone-free and organic meats for the holiday dinner table. More information on a la carte buying and CSA shares at farmtofolk.com.
There we have it. We do get by with a little help from our friends. Lots of us are volunteers here, and that's what community radio is all about. And we thank you for all the new members that have signed up, and all of you who are listening to the Donald on a Kitchen. If you have not become a member and joined this fine effort, this fine bunch of folk, these great things that happen on the airways, please send in your membership. Membership starts at $55. Go to khoifm.org. Push the magic donate button. Support this radio station. So, it's full steam ahead for the holidays.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I hope you guys have already started. I'm sure at least everyone is in the planning stages, right?
I think so. Well, today, we're going to talk a little bit about snow, nut brittles, Donna's visit to a great spice shop, and visions of sugar plums. Yes. We did have a little bit of snow, and the cold weather is kind of sneaking in on us. So we got over the Thanksgiving holidays just fine. Both Donna and I did a bit of traveling, so we've got a little road trip report.
Yeah, we got a few stories to tell you.
Road trip. I traveled over the past holidays. I took a trip to Arkansas and, believe it or not, Muskogee, Oklahoma. I didn't know I was going to go to Muskogee, but there it was.
This was your husband's family, right?
In Arkansas, uh-huh, yes. We had a gathering.
Family.
Gathering of the family in, actually, Fayetteville this year. Fayetteville, Arkansas, which was always, it's always a good time. That was sunny and still rather southern living feeling. It was nice. But we also visited some friends in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And this is a wonderful young couple who we've kept in touch with over the years. They were
beginning farmers, right?
Beginning and going off great guns.
So they've been farming, what, 5 years?
Their farm is, this is in the third year where they are right now. They were part of the Iowa State University Sustainable Ag Program and learned all kinds of good things here. So some of you may remember them about 5-6 years ago here. Cassie and Andy Herringshaw, they studied here, and then they took off for Bolivia and did a lot of sustainable ag things down in Bolivia for a while. And then they came back to the United States looking for some land, like most young farmers want to look for land. And believe it or not, they ended up in Muskogee, Oklahoma. Why, will you say, would they be in Muskogee, Oklahoma? That is where family is. And nothing helps better than brothers and dads and uncles that can help out making a farm.
And building aunts fences and uncles and barns. And
yes, and grandmas and all that. So Andy's family is there. We visited them, and I must report they have a inspiring and great up-and-coming urban farm. They are right on the edge of Muskogee, Oklahoma, which is kind of a sprawly town, maybe just kind of getting going when it has to do with local foods, but Andy and Cassie are doing their part. And I wish to report that they found 25 acres of land on the edge of town, and it was the old drive-in movie theater.
I think that is terrific. I'm trying to give us some visuals on that, Lana.
So this is a repurposing thing that is just really, really good. Well, 25 acres, I mean, naturally it wouldn't
Wouldn't be all drive-in.
No. But so they have a nice big place for gardens.
So they
wood.
Built a house.
The straw bale house. They collect rainwater. If you want to have a nice experience, take a rainwater shower. Oh, it's lovely. We're in touch with them on a lot of things. They are so inspiring. Now, get this. They've got about 2-3 acres of vegetables going, and they're introducing Muskogee, Oklahoma to things like garlic. People in Oklahoma already know what to do with okra, but garlic is kind of one of their most wonderful crops that they're doing.
Who do you suppose they'd all been using, the crystallized garlic salt or something forever?
I didn't ask, but anyway, they said they're doing great with the garlic. One more thing here. Picture an old drive-in movie theater. Now, this hasn't been a drive-in movie theater for a while, so the buildings were gone, but slabs for, like, the projection house was there, and underground wiring and places to put up the screen were there. And remember, for those of you who remember drive-in movies, remember how you used to have to park on kind of a berm?
Little inclines,
kind of, you know, in a theater.
So your windshield is pointed at the screen.
And then there'd be these little things, little stanchions that would have these speakers on them. Well, although you couldn't see the stanchions with the speakers on them, Andy says he's run into many of them with the lawnmower. But these berms were still there, the little shapes, kind of like a little amphitheater. And picture those now, fruit trees. Fruit trees are in the old drive-in theater parking area.
In the little structured in the amphitheater shape.
Yeah.
Oh. Cute.
And the house is kind of in there, too. Oh. And so three cheers to some beginning farmers who are going great guns in Muskogee, Oklahoma. Yes.
Excellent.
Three cheers. And also, then we went to Arkansas and had a wonderful Thanksgiving with family. Ah. Oh, yeah. And one thing we did for family, we made homemade butter for the rolls. In Arkansas. So that was fun.
Homemade butter. And you used what? Butter churn?
No. This is something my sister-in-law has been doing for a while. You put heavy cream in a mason jar. You close it up.
Quart jar.
And then you pass it around among the gents and the kids that are sitting around.
Shake.
Yeah, it took quite a while, but it does turn to butter.
You know, that must be a media phenomenon, because at my Thanksgiving in Vermont, the father of the household asked me why I didn't do the whipped cream that way.
Oh.
And I, of course, didn't do it that way, because if you're making butter, it's kind of fail-proof. But if you're trying to make whipped cream and they keep shaking and shaking and shaking, you can end up with butter when you really wanted whipped cream.
Aha.
So
quality control there, folks.
But I think it is participatory, and it's a lovely idea. So my Thanksgiving trip, my son lives in Vermont, so I wanted to go visit him there. And he insisted that the weekend before Thanksgiving, we actually meet in New York. So we did a little foodie tour, and we went to a place called SOS Chefs, which is a very I believe a Tunisian woman who runs it, but it's this tiny little place way down in the Lower East Side that has every imaginable food, mostly dried. I mean, they do have a little bit of produce, but they have oils and spices and I'm going to read you off what I brought back. So I got a tomato powder, which is basically – Lana and I were discussing, if Lana takes her beautiful dried, and you're drying them in the food processor, right?
Food dryer.
Food dryer. food, yeah. Sorry. If you take the dry tomatoes and put them into the food processor.
Now you put them in the food
processor. Yeah, that it would powder them like this. So this is just a finely ground dried tomato. But it's lovely to just sprinkle on things because, first of all, it makes a little red on everything. So that is yummy. And then I also got some Urfa pepper, which I love. It's a Turkish pepper that's very dark black, but it's not so much heat as it is pepper flavor. Aleppo pepper is also – I didn't buy that
what's
there.
Spell
Urfa.
That.
What? Urfa. U-R-F-A.
Urfa.
Urfa. I also bought – so we're going from the Middle East. We're going to Japan. I bought some dried yuzu peel. Which is now yuzu is that Japanese citrus that I just love. That's very hard to find. Although I have to say, at SOS Chef, she actually had some fresh yuzu as well.
Oh,
but I didn't think I could travel that back to Ames so easily. So I bought the dried yuzu. So,
and yuzu is
Y-U-Z-U. Now here's a good use for this. If you take your homemade butter or regular butter, and you soften it up, you can put some yuzu zest into it, and it will kind of permeate the whole butter.
It is intensely citrus.
Yeah, it's really lovely.
It's wonderful.
I also bought some porcini powder, which is really good to add to soups. It adds a lot of umami or all kinds. It's another finely powdered thing. I think you could. Like with the tomato powder, you could probably achieve the same results by taking – smell it, Lana. Taking dried porcinis, which are not too hard to find around here, and putting those also into the grind in the food processor. Then I bought some really unusual – we're still trying to figure out quite what this is. It's called a Sancho pepper. It looks like a tiny little dried, I don't know, it's not a peppercorn. It has this very citrusy smell, but it's a pepper.
No. I would say that was citrus too, but it's not.
It's not. And the other day I gave Lana a taste. Evan, you should put one in your mouth if you're ready. It has the numbing properties of a Sichuan peppercorn. So, and it's got some heat in it.
It's surprising. It looks like a little, just a tiny little round flower
seed. Yeah, the size of a peppercorn.
And it is kind of dried and popped open. And it was really a surprise.
Yeah, so we'll be playing around with those things. Then the other thing that I bought while I was there, since she's Tunisian, I figured that her za'atar would be really good. That's Z-A-A-T-A-R with an apostrophe in there between the A's. So za'atar. And I'm going to read this a little bit from Jerusalem, a cookbook, which is a wonderful – it's a Palestinian and Israeli pair that are very successful in the restaurant business in London. And they have multiple cookbooks, some of which you can find at the Ames Library. The author is Yotam Ottolenghi, O-T-T-O-L-E-N-G-H-I, and Sami Tamimi. That's the couple. The restaurant, I think, is called Ottolenghi, but they write about za'atar, which is really a mainstay of Middle Eastern. Like, they sprinkle it on everything, on yogurt, on your pita, with olive oil, on your hummus. I put some in my soup last night. It was fabulous. It was just a vegetable soup with a pork base. But I just sprinkled some of it in at the last minute just before I ate it. It was wonderful. So the thing with za'atar, and you can get it here at some of our ethnic stores. However, the main – it's a spice mix. It has sesame seeds and things like that. But it's traditionally made with hyssop, not anise hyssop, but hyssop. And a lot of the za'atar that's in this country is actually made with marjoram because it's much easier to get. So I wanted the one with the real hyssop. What they were saying in the Ottolenghi book, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is that za'atar is a key ingredient in the Palestinian diet and has become central to modern Israeli cuisine. The spices mix is sold at all supermarkets and grocery stores. Cooks sprinkle it liberally on dishes to add zest. Regrettably, za'atar has joined the long list of thorny subjects poisoning the fraught relationship between the Arabs and the Jews, because Israel declared the herb, which is hyssop, which people for centuries have been just picking wild because it grows everywhere. So Israel declared the herb an endangered species and banned picking it in the wild. Although a compelling argument was made about preserving the dwindling population of the wild za'atar, the decree was taken without any dialogue with the Arabs, who see it as a deliberate violation of their way of life. So it's a controversial little thing, but it is delicious. And I also want to tell you that SOS Chefs has a website where all of these things can be ordered, mail order, which I found out later. So it's SOS-chefs.com. And you might want to take a look at the website. I mean, it's unbelievable what they have. They have mushrooms, herbs, roots and barks, truffles, premium spices, spice blends, peppercorns, salts, chili products, oils, vinegars, beans and lentils, grains and flours, pasta, nuts, dried fruits, mixology things, vanillas, extracts and essential oils and hydrosols, flours and teas, sugars and syrups, chocolate, freeze-dried ingredients and powders, honeys and jams, it says other passions, and special requests. So I think one of the things that they do is if a chef is looking for something in huge quantities or unusual things, they actually go out and track it down. But the store was charming. It was like a library. The shelves were just piled up to the ceiling, and they had ladders to go up and get things. And so do look at the website. There's pictures. Even if you don't want to order, it's a good thing to know if you ever find something that you think, oh, this recipe looks fabulous, I'd really love to try it, but where on earth will I find blah, 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 blah? Here's where you can find it, and they will send it to you.
All these things. What a nice thing. New tastes for the holidays.
Oh, wonderful. So much fun. So much fun. So that's SOS-chefs.com.
That's wonderful. As you opened up these jars and I was tasting things here, this za'atar, I realized I've tasted this before.
Oh, yeah.
In central Iowa, because I have a friend named Nazik. And she comes to the farmer's market, and she grew up in Lebanon and goes back there often. And she brought back some because she says she can't cook without it. And
exactly.
So, yeah.
And
so
probably
she
made it herself.
It's a blend. It's like a
mix.
Curry.
Has, I'm not sure what else. I know it has sesame seeds in it, among other things, and the hyssop, but something else. Now, these two za'atars, we just both tasted them, are slightly different. I mean, they do resemble each other, but... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's like curries. Every family has their za'atar mix. Who knows?
Also, it's kind of nice as we're moving into the holidays here, we're thinking of all these stories that we've been telling each other for centuries.
Yep.
Happen in this place called the Holy Land. And although it isn't very holy right now because we're doing a lot of interesting, awful things to one another there, still, people are cooking. We have taste to share, and like you said, this Jerusalem cookbook is a Palestinian man and an Israeli man.
This is what I love about the Ottolenghi things. They are really very cross-cultural and quite respectful of everybody's traditions, and they make delicious food. The recipes are wonderful.
Great. Oh, I have a question. You brought back these Sancho peppers.
Uh-huh.
And I wish to report that when one puts it in your mouth— You think, well, nothing's happening. This doesn't even taste like a pepper. It smells sort of lemony. But then things start happening to the inside of your mouth. So
Besides heat.
Besides heat. It's tingly.
It's a numbing pepper.
It's tingly. It's refreshing. But you think, oh, my goodness, will my mouth ever be the same? Isn't it wonderful that the world is full of these kinds of
sensations. Tastes? So
sensations.
Many sensations.
Sancho pepper. Good. Good. And back to the Urfa peppers. Is this, open this up, this looks like black charcoal. It does not smell like black charcoal. I assume these are peppers that are roasted first?
Or I would guess so. I mean, it smells slightly roasted. It doesn't smell smoky.
No, not smoky.
Really.
But it's like black. See, I can't think of a better thing to do for the holidays than taste new things. And once you get a nose full of some of this stuff, I don't know, what would you put that Sancho pepper in?
You know, I haven't used it yet. I'm still like kind of, I'm baffled by it.
Yeah,
you know, I'll obviously start experimenting, and probably I'll start experimenting with maybe crushing it and putting it in, not cooking it too much first, just to see, like, oh, I can't even think right now. Maybe I would take
over a salad or a radicchio kind of salad-y thing.
That would
sprinkle.
That's true. We could the way you would grind black pepper.
Right.
We'll just start playing with it and see what happens. It also probably, since it's a numbing pepper, the way Sichuan peppers are, it would probably be good in some Asian foods too because it has that little citrusy quality.
Oh, numb.
I might also grind some up and just put it in olive oil and then try dipping it and playing with it to see what happens when the flavor is sort of liberated into the oil. I don't know. And then, of course, I'll probably look online and see what everybody else is doing it. So it's spelled, in case you want to know, S-A-N-C-H-O. It might be a good trick pepper, too, if you want to freak people out.
Just the thing for your
numbing pepper.
All right. Well, I could see this around a family holiday
exactly.
table.
Are
there some guests you would like to numb? Oh, dear. Now, Donna, I don't know. But isn't that amazing?
It would be a good stocking stuffer. It's a little jar.
Ooh.
Oh, here, try one of these.
That sounds great.
We had a really good time. So that's Thanksgiving's over, done, gone, and here we are, ready for...
Yes, we're going to advent into some more talk about seasonal foods here, but first I would like to remind you, this is KHOI 89.1, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is community radio for the heart of Iowa. And I'd also like to remind you that KHOI gets by with your support. Go to KHOIFM.org. Become a member of this fine station in the spirit of the holidays.
I think memberships might make a lovely Christmas gift.
Now,
for those that have everything.
Everything. They don't have everything yet if you don't have a membership. So.
There you go.
KHOIFM.org. Go to the donate button. That's a good Christmas gift. That was music from the Barn Owl Band. They played Stony Point and Pretty Little Dog. Ah, yes, very good. We were talking about Donna's visit to a spice shop in New York, and she brought back something called the Sancho pepper, and our right-on-the-spot engineer, Evan, has some newly found information on the Sancho pepper.
Sancho pepper report. What'd you find, Evan?
Quick Sancho pepper report. According to some very quick research on the internet, the Sancho pepper is derived from Japan and parts of the Korean peninsula. It is traditionally used in eel dishes.
Thing I was thinking of making Japanese eel tonight for dinner. How perfect.
There you go, right? Exactly. I mean, you were definitely right on when you said that it would go well in Asian dishes. Yeah, it's also used on occasion to flavor miso soup, as well as used in various noodle dishes that have broth, Japanese pickles.
I bet it could be used on some sort of pork things, too.
I think that would be delicious.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds incredible.
Maybe some Japanese noodle soups with, like, I had a couple of Japanese ramen dishes while I was in New York, which would be, right, you could make a slightly miso base, put the Japanese noodles in, which you can buy around town, and then probably grind up a little Sancho pepper and drop in some bits of pork or bacon.
Yeah, some thinly sliced pork, I think, would be definitely the ticket. Yeah.
And some a few good greens. How's that
absolutely.
So there we go. On-the-spot recipe. Sancho pepper.
So, Evan, you took a little bite of the Sancho pepper a few minutes ago. Do you still taste it in your mouth?
A little bit, yeah. It has a very lingering kind of tart flavor. It reminds
me. Any sensation there?
Oh, absolutely. It's like if you think about sour candies, but you take away the nasty processed taste. That's kind of what I was getting. Very bitter, very tart.
Oh, that's a good thing. Oh,
and some heat, and then that numbing quality.
It's very funny,
isn't it?
It's kind of like if your leg fell asleep, but it's on your tongue a little bit.
Ooh,
good descriptor. Way to go, Evan.
That's good. All right, we are here in the Donna Lana kitchen. And we're going to talk more about good things to eat. The holiday season always brings with it visions of sugar plums.
Sugar, sugar, sugar.
Yes. Donna, let's talk a little bit about sugar. I mean, it's here, and I enjoy it, but let's find out more about sugar for the holidays.
Well, I do think that we're all kind of on a quest, at least it's been a lot in the food media, that while for the past 15 or 20 years everybody was busy reducing their fat, it seems that a major problem in our culture is actually too much sugar consumption. You know, if you think about over the long arc of human history and dietary needs, obviously fat was really important. It used to be a very scarce thing. Like the fat, every bit of fat on an animal was always saved and utilized. But sugar is a fairly new thing relatively into our diet. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago I was working with a young friend of mine, and she was maybe junior high or grade school or something. And they, of course, were reading Little House on the Prairie. And there is a book, The Little House on the Prairie Cookbook, which actually shows the kinds of foods that people ate. And so what we did in it is a molasses taffy recipe, because they didn't really have sugar. They had more access to molasses, or like a piece of sugar was or a piece of candy was a very, very rare treat. People just did not eat as much sugar. So we made this molasses candy taffy pull, which was immensely fun. And then she took it off to school because that was part of her, you know, book report. And the children who were not used to eating molasses kind of all went, yuck, because tastes change with habits and cultural. So we have become a sugar eating nation. And sugar, like salt, your palate becomes accustomed to it. So it, as I personally have been trying to reduce sugar a little bit, and I do find now some conventional products just plain taste too sweet. Just like sometimes you'll eat something and you go, oh, that's too salty, because I mean, I have plenty of salt and sugar in my diet still, but I'm like I've moved from regular chocolate to bittersweets or semi-sweets. And like my chocolate chips, I use semi-sweet chocolate chips or bittersweet chocolate chips. Just tone it down a little bit. And I find in some recipes, like when I made that meringue chestnut recipe that we had been talking about,
Oh, yes.
It was really yummy. But I made a second version and I dropped the sugar down a little bit because it just tasted too sweet to me. And the sweetness of it kind of overpowered the chestnut flavor that I was looking for. I mean, sugar is it's potent. So
it sounds like also it sounds like sugar is a very learned habit.
And boy, have we learned it.
And it's funny. Now, remember, folks, there are large corporations that kind of are glad that it's a learned habit. So be careful out there. I mean, you can eat whatever you want,
well,
but be careful.
It's a natural habit for, I mean, human breast milk is sweet. You know, it's one of the major flavor drivers on our palate. Unfortunately, sugar has become very, very cheap, especially high fructose corn sugars. And so it's used in a lot of processed foods because it's an inexpensive ingredient that the manufacturers can just heap in there, doesn't cost them very much, and people love it. So buyer beware. We've oversweetened our palates. Here's a little something from Prevention Magazine. Well, first, I found this Ralph Nader quote. Let's see. If God didn't want us to eat sugar, he wouldn't have made dentists. That's from Ralph Nader.
What a wise man.
Yeah.
Just another one of those good statements from Ralph.
And this is from Prevention Magazine. 7 things that happen when you stop eating sugar. Now, I haven't reached a point where I'm going to stop eating it, but reducing it wouldn't hurt. So it's the 7 things are your heart will do a happy dance. Too much sugar is apparently not good for heart. It says you won't have to borrow your teen's acne cream, so it may clear up your skin a little bit. You'll sidestep diabetes. Hooray. These are serious things. You won't have to fake a smile. Your teeth are going to be improved. You will sleep when you're supposed to. So sugar is a bit of a stimulant. And here's another good one. You'll remember the name of your boss's husband. Apparently your brain fog will be reduced. And finally, this is the good news, you will lose an extra 10 pounds. Now, this is all according to Prevention Magazine, but it's worth noting that these are some serious issues and we would do well to reduce our sugar intake. Of course, it's very hard during the holidays.
But it isn't quite so hard because I just made some cookies. And really, you can kind of grab your hand as it reaches for that sugar jar. And really, especially cookies and things that you bake, there's some slop there. Don't put so much in.
First of all, be sure to level your so you're not putting extra and level your measuring cups. You can also I mean, this is not foolproof, but my intuits would suggest that in almost any recipe you probably could reduce the sugar by 10%.
Oh, at least.
I mean, sometimes it's going to make a structural change. So, you know, you have to be careful. Like, you know, cookies really do depend on sugar to crystallize. But overall, and you don't have to sprinkle the extra sugar on top. And you don't have to add the sparklet thingies. Although this time of year, it's kind of pretty. Now, there was another report. This came out in the New York Times this week that Nestle's, who is a big driver of all kinds of food in our culture, is working on some kind of insane new sugar to fight obesity.
Now, what? Now, come on now. Nestle's is coming up with an insane sugar. Okay.
Nestle, the maker of a stunning array of products, including Cheerios, Gerber, Carnation, Kit Kat, and about a billion other products, announced that the company is working on a crazy new sugar. So the headlines were saying it should reduce eventually the sugar content of these products by 40%. Now, that's no small deal. And they're doing this not by replacing the sugar with some other alternative chemical thing, of which there are many, like aspartame and the other things that are slightly questionable or you know. Anyway, there are a million fake sugars. No, what they're doing is they've This is they're not telling us exactly because it's going to be proprietary. But the article likened it to, you know, sugar is a solid crystal. So what they've done is they've hollowed it out in a way. So they've changed the crystalline form and making it rather like a beach ball.
Oh, no. Whoa. OK. So it's like puffed sugar.
Something.
Something
like that. So what you're getting is the impression of, and they've made it more soluble on the tongue for an immediate sugar hit while they're actually giving you less sugar. Now, it remains to be seen how this is going to work, but I must say, in terms of fighting obesity in a culture-wide epidemic, this is a hopeful step. I mean, I'm not going to run out and buy a million Nestle's products. And I think probably the implication was they're going to slowly formulate it in so that obviously they don't want all the Kit Kat buyers to be in an outrage, you know. We're supposed to not notice this.
Okay.
Something like that. But I thought, well, that's creative living through better science. Maybe it won't be terrible.
Because so many of us do not bake by ourselves. We go out and you buy your
Kit Kats ready-made.
And so Nestle's doing some things with sugar.
There's been all these new soda taxes and things like that.
Uh-huh.
People realize that sugar is not a good thing for us. And the obesity epidemic is, in fact, probably driven more by sugar than by fat.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, it is. However, you know, we still shouldn't be eating all those French fries.
With sugar on them. No. Okay. All right.
I don't know. So now Lana and I are going to proceed to give you some very sugary recipes for the holidays because it's the holidays,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I'm not giving up sugar, but I sure can be mindful of the quantity of the sugar. So you've got some holiday treats. Let's think of holiday treats. And these can be treats.
Well, I think we've talked about this before, but one of my something I almost always do for the holidays make my own candied citrus. And it's not too difficult. It's not something you want to make the day of. You kind of make them early in December because they'll last a long time. And you keep them, you store them in the dry place.
Oh, I love candied citrus. Okay. And it's not hard to make.
You can buy it, but the stuff you buy in the grocery store is unappealing.
Uh-huh. It's probably kind of like that stuff you put in fruitcakes, the Day-Glo stuff.
Yeah.
Who knows where it's been? So tell us how to make candied citrus.
Well, I basically use the recipe that's in The Joy of Cooking, and it involves – and I buy organic fruits for this because – a lot of the pesticides are concentrated in the skins. So it's one of those places I think it's rather a good idea to do that. And, you can candy all kinds of citruses. Oranges, of course, lemons, grapefruits would be the three most prominent, with orange being the number one, mm-hmm, probably. Mm-hmm. And basically what you're doing is you cut it in half and you – take all of the fruit out. You can put the fruit aside and juice it for later and kind of try to scrape as much as the white pith off the peel as you can. And then you boil them, throw away the water. Boil them, throw away the water. Boil them, throw away the water. You're boiling out the bitterness. Now, don't do it too much until they're it's a hard – depends on the citrus.
So it's al dente probably?
No. I keep tasting.
Okay.
There's some initial bitterness you want to get rid of. Okay. And I don't really cut them into pieces until I've boiled them because it's much easier cutting them then.
Good idea.
And the other thing I do – I mean the basic principle is you boil them and get the bitterness out of the peel. And then eventually you boil them again in a sugar syrup.
Ah.
And one of the things that I do to make mine have a stronger flavor, because we don't have the freshest citrus here in Iowa, is I juice the juice out of the oranges, which I cut them, I juice them, and then I scrape all of the pith and the insides out. So when I'm making the sugar syrup that I boil the cut pieces in, I put the juice back into it. Because it gives it a little one more bit of flavor. So you boil them slowly for a while. I would say, you know, look up a good recipe and play with it.
The joy of cooking.
The joy of cooking
is good.
They
know what they're doing.
I mean,
yes.
I pulled up another one from Rodale's Organic Life. It's called Candied Citrus Appeal. Tangerines. They talked about tangerines, too. I also sometimes, if I feel like they still don't have enough flavor, I have some citrus oils that I keep in my refrigerator, usually lemon, tangerine, and orange, which I use in baking. But you can also drop them into the sugar syrup. So you want to cook them down, and then you need to get them drier. So you kind of, once they've cooked down, you kind of spread them on a little rack and let them drip through.
They're still in chunks, or you've cut them up by now?
Well, I cut them up once I start putting them in the sugar syrup.
Okay.
So you boil, then you cut them into the shapes you want, whether it's strips or chunks or even little triangles if you're going to chocolate dip them. And then you boil them for a while, and then you let them kind of dry on a rack dripping through so some of the excess water comes out. And you do toss a little extra sugar, but not too much. I also have found in our climate it's really helpful. I put them on a Silpat, which is the silicone. It's silicone. And, folks, you may want to go to some place like Cook's Emporium, because they have them. They're an expensive item, but my Silpats, which are the size of a regular cookie sheet, are 20 or 25 years old and still going strong. It is a worthwhile investment. Things don't stick. So I put the Silpat down, and I spread the candied peels, and then I turn the oven on at about 200. Then I put them in the oven, and I turn it off, and I let them sit overnight. That dries them out, because the trickiest part is drying them out without adding so much sugar that you lose your orange or citrus flavor.
Candied citrus is
wonderful.
And it's so good.
Yeah, and then you can bake with it. You can put it on Christmas cookies. You can put it in your fruitcake. How I started making it, because I used to make fruitcakes.
You can dip them in chocolate and eat them.
Oh, and they make wonderful gifts.
Oh,
they're so pretty.
Oh, how nice. So, in the spirit of lovely things, I'll remind you that this is KHOY. This is Adana Lana Kitchen, and we'll keep up with a little more thoughts of lovely things with the Waltz of Little Girls. Was the Waltz of the Little Girls. Ah, doesn't that sound like visions of sugar plums? Yes, it does. Donna has some things to say about nut brittles.
Yeah, and now is also a good time to make nut brittles. These are easy, do-ahead Christmas gifts. You know, you give some to the postman, the ladies at the bank, the next-door neighbors. Little packages are so appreciated, and it's fun to make. Now, of course, peanut brittle is the classic. However, it can be made with any kind of nut. Pistachios are wonderful. Walnuts. And you can add spices.
Oh.
Like, for example, this is off the top of my head. How about a walnut nut brittle where I put in some coriander and some black pepper with walnuts, maybe.
Oh, that'd be good.
You know, I mean, they have to be dry spices because you can't change the liquid. Like, you can't throw vanilla in or something like that. The basic recipes are, And this is something I made even as a child. We used to do this a lot. Of course, it was always peanut brittle. Oops, I've lost the recipe. Basically, it's you're melting sugar. And I use my cast iron pan. I can't figure out why I can't find it.
You're melting sugar and not burning it?
Well, you want it to get brown. You stir, stir. The recipe said up to 300 degrees if you're using a candy thermometer. However, I never did, so I don't now. You stir it as it turns brown. You want it to get a nice golden color.
That's just sugar, no liquid. No,
well, now I've lost the – where did the recipe go? Well, all right. I've screwed up here. Sorry. Yeah, I think it goes some – look it up on the – even in the Joy of Cooking or online. Anyway, it's basically butter and sugar and – but you're browning the sugar
first.
And if you were going to put in, say, the coriander or the pepper, I would put it right in with the sugar.
Okay.
So that it gets mixed into the base. And then once it gets exactly where you want it, there's a final poof where you add – baking soda, I think, and it kind of bubbles up. Then you quickly throw the nuts in, and then you spread it really quickly on a buttered baking pan or your Silpat one more time. And you get it as thin as you can. But if you butter your spoon, that helps spread it out a little bit better. And then you can sprinkle flaked salt on top as well, like a Malden sea salt.
That's good.
Because it's really a caramely, you know, the brittle is actually a caramely kind of flavor if you've browned it enough. So I would urge you to be very creative. Like you could do pistachio curry, nut brittles.
This whole thing, I made it just very, very seldom. I should make it again. The chemistry of it is just amazing.
Oh, it's fun to do with children.
It's just because it you have to move fast or it turns to cement.
And it's also, it's very hot. So it's a little bit, you don't do it with tiny children. You do it with older children. I made it, and I don't even call it brittle. I call it toffee because kind of that's what it is. And mine was, I dropped in black walnuts and cocoa nibs with some black pepper. And maybe I put coriander in that too. I don't remember. And then here was the final. I broke it up into really tiny pieces, and then I made my fudge, my classic fudge recipe. And as the fudge was in a very cool state, then I pressed the very finely ground toffee into the top of the fudge.
Yum.
Yum, yum. So that's a lovely Christmas gift that, you know, if you make it in advance, you've got it there when you need like a last-minute gift for somebody that's personal.
Yes.
Homemade.
And it's good to nibble on while you're doing Christmas cards.
Oh, yeah. It is a little bit addictive, I have to say.
I like it. Like you mentioned adding chocolate bits inside.
Not chocolate bits.
Chocolate
nibs.
Nibs, little
the,
bit. Little
the
bits.
Nibs are the, you know, it's that unsweetened part of the cocoa bean that's ground. You could also probably do it with little bits of ground coffee as well. If you wanted to. But I find that black walnuts and chocolate are just divine together.
A nut brittle with all those good
if you
things.
Used regular walnuts plus black walnuts, plus the cocoa nibs and a little bit of salt and pepper.
Oh, Santa Claus would love you a whole lot.
Anyway, everybody, Merry Christmas. Start cooking now.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. So we have a thought about snow here.
Yes, snow. Wish, 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 wish. Hope, hope,
We have to have snow for Christmas. We did have a little bit.
We had a tiny little
bit.
Of course, and eventually we'll be wishing it all away, but, you know, that's
I love snow.
Fickle human nature.
Snow.
Yeah.
I love snow.
We want to get our sleds out.
Because even here in the Midwest, we know it comes eventually, but it always hits us by surprise. It always is a miracle.
Well, it is breathtakingly beautiful when you get the snow, you wake up in the morning, there it is, and the sun is shining on it, and the icicles begin hanging down in the windows. You know, I mean, really?
We're starting to talk about Christmas card here.
Really?
Here's a poem I'd like to share with you, a poem by Mae Sarton, reminding us of the wonder of snow. December Moon by Mae Sarton. Before going to bed after a fall of snow, I look out on the field. shining there in the moonlight, so calm, untouched, and white. Snow silence fills my head after I leave the window. Hours later, near dawn, when I look down again, the whole landscape has changed. The perfect surface gone crisscross and written on, where wild creatures ranged while the moon rose and shone. Why did my dog not bark? Why did I hear no sound there on the snow-locked ground in the tumultuous dark? How much can come, how much can go when the December moon is bright? What worlds of play will never know, sleeping away the cold winter night after a fall of snow? That was The December Moon by Mae Sarton. I like to slide into it. Oh, thinking of, you were speaking of nut brittles, but I don't suppose you'd put any of those Sancho peppers in the nut brittle.
Let's see.
Well, we were trying to think what we could use it for.
Well, you know, people do make, I've had a peanut brittle that had a cayenne or a red pepper flakes in it. And I do put black pepper just a tiny bit in almost every dessert I make. That you could make a joke peanut brittle.
Well, actually, it'd probably be pretty good, but I would suggest really grinding that stuff up fine, because if you got a whole chunk of one of those.
Oh, but that could be the funny part.
Oh, my.
like the sneezing powder we used to have as kids. Did you ever get any of that?
No, I didn't. My goodness.
I don't know. It was some envelope of something that you were supposed to, like, open it up and pour it on your sister's pillow, and then she'd go to bed and she'd start sneezing like crazy. You know, that kind of stuff. It was harmless but annoying.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, visions of sugar plums are turning into visions of imps here. Imps. Very, very good. Actually, Christmas brings out the kid in us, and I think it's wonderful to have fun. And it's wonderful to have tastes that we can explore. You brought in all kinds of wonderful good spices to talk about, and we talked about sugar, and we talked about nut brittles. Nut brittles, yes. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We talked about snow and nut brittles and Donna's visit to a great spice shop and
getting
sugar.
Ready for Christmas.
Yes, yes. This is Community Radio. Support KHOIFM.org. Donate. Become
Give
a member.
Christmas gifts.
Become a member and wrap up a membership. And give it to someone you like.
Yeah, it's a local charitable organization.
It's fat-free. There you go. So let us know what's on your plate. If you'd like to contact us, go to khoiradio@gmail.com and put Donna Lana Kitchen in the subject line. We would love to hear from you. We'll go out with some music by the Barn Owl Band. In the spirit of a farm and cooking show, where it starts out with Speed the Plow, and then it kind of slides into one of my favorite winter tunes, Cold Frosty Morning. Oh, what a good bunch of stuff. Barn Owl Band plays a lot for contra dances, and imagine yourself dancing to these good tunes. Again, support this fine radio station. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.